session number 11204, rule 1.
Mr. Stanley Ferguson, Reel 1. Mm-hmm. When and where were you born, Mr. Ferguson?
A place called Swinbank Street in the town centre of Sunderland.
What kind of area was it?
It wasn't East End, it was more or less middle class. You know, quiet. It's a street of about 6 houses. It's not there now, it's Walker's Lilies actually. And from there I went down to Howick Street, which is just off the East End. Then up to the Avenue near Christchurch. And then I came up here, and I've been here the rest of my life, about 36 years or so.
What job did your father do?
He's a he was in the shipyard, a plater.
And what kind of wages did he have?
In those days, I think about £2, 30 bob, £2, in general, you know. Man of money getting, I don't know. But I should think so. Well, that's...
What was your date of birth, Mr. Ferguson?
June 21, 1918.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
No, just the one, myself.
And did your mother work?
Yes, part-time on the Northern buses, cleaner. For a few years, like.
Which school did you go to?
A place called Hutton Road.
And that was Sunderland,
That was
course.
Sunderland, yes.
Did you have many memories of your school life?
Not really, no. It was an elementary school. I remember I was in the top class for 3 years. I couldn't get any higher, and that's about all. You know, this with the same teacher. And, of course, the teachers in those days took more subjects than what they do now. You more or less had the same teacher all day. That's what I remember about the school.
And what was school discipline like?
Oh, strict. If you didn't behave yourself, you got the cane, you know. I mean, you deserved it. But otherwise, people just behaved themselves. Took it as, you know, a natural thing to do. Called the master sir, not Tom, Dick or Harry like they do now.
What work did you take up when you left school?
Well, I left school at 14 and I went straight out and got a job delivering fish. Then I looked there and I got a job delivering meat. And then, oh yes, I went to a dyes and cleaner called Pullers of Perth. And after a while there, I was a junior salesman there, by the way. My mother knew an alderman who knew somebody, and I got a job on the corporation as a punch boy. That was in 1936.
As a what boy?
Punt. Used to change the lines for the tram cars. I don't have them now, of course. Then, of course, from there I went into the shed, handyman, onto the buses, conductor, and driving. And I just sat my test just before the war, and had I got the results, I might have been put back a while, but it didn't come through. And from there, well, I went into television.
So you were working for the corporation?
For 14 years, and I left, and I went on the Northern as a driver for 6 years. And whilst I was there, I took an interest in making amplifiers and things like that. And a chap used to come into a shop, a friend of mine, and he said, "Why don't you take it up full-time, TV?" I said, "Oh, that's a good idea." So I went down and got the job. And I stayed there 13 years, and I ended up as manager.
And this was after the war, was it?
Oh, yes.
What hours did you work before the war in your early days?
I know it was a 6-day week, but I should think then about 8 o'clock to 6, something like that. I couldn't say for now. But they were all 6-day weeks, 48 hours, you know. And the wages were about 30 bob, average.
Can you remember what you were doing the day that war broke out?
The time that war was declared. Actually, I was walking somewhere. I remember I was walking from the town, I think. But other than that, no. It was just normal day, you know. You hear the news, war broke out, and that was it. I was called up on the September the 15th, 2nd Militia.
Had there been any signs prior to this that war was becoming closer?
Well, if there had been, I wouldn't have known. I mean, when you're young, you don't think of things like that. You know, you just get on everyday life kind of style. You accept it. If it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Do you recall how you felt when you heard that war had been declared?
Not really. Didn't sink in. Just young. Remember, I was looking forward to it. As we did in them days, you know, because it's an adventure. Oh, it's a war, great. You know, you don't think of what could happen. You're too young in those days. You don't think of them kind of things. Responsibility as something you leave till you're later in life.
Do you recall any of the older people around you having any thoughts about the war?
No. No, none of them really discussed. I don't think my mother was too keen on the idea of me going away, like, but then again, all mothers were the same, weren't they?
No one had any views upon how long it might last?
Oh, no. Well, you might hear one say, oh, it only lasts a few months, things like that. Never 6 years, kind of thing. I mean, that's beyond your imagination, you know. Short and sharp.
You said that you were in with the 2nd Militia. What exactly does that mean?
Well, it means I was called up. The 1st Militia was called up in July, and I was called up, because of my age, in September, the 2nd Militia. And my number was 101-304-14, and that's going back a bit.
And where did you report to?
I was supposed to go to Fenham Barracks, but instead of that we went to Blanford Castle, in the castle itself.
Had you had a medical before you went in?
I don't think so. I wouldn't like to say on that. I don't think so, though. I can't remember.
And had you been given a choice of regiment that you could join?
Oh, yes. I mean, what did you want to be? I said, I'd like to be a sailor. I ended up with the DLI. Oh, yes. That's how they usually work in those days, you know. If you're the driver, they'll give you a job in an office. And if you're an officer, they'll give you a job driving. Seemed to be typical. I thought so anyway.
So you went to Bransworth Castle. Yeah. It must have been quite a change, obviously, from civilian to army. How did you take to it?
Well, we were all a bit puzzled, a bit bemused, actually. We had no uniform for a week. And I remember the first day there, we were just hanging about and we were getting a bit hungry. And somebody said, go upstairs and get some biscuits. Well, I said, that's something anyway. But when we got the biscuits, there was turned out to be 3 squares called palliasses. It was a bed. I always remember that. And we used to stop up awake at night listening for the ghosts, because they're supposed to be haunted castle, you know, never heard nothing. As I say, it shows you how young we were.
The discipline was any problem to you?
Oh, yes. Well, it wasn't a problem, but we sticked. Oh, yes. Your life wasn't your own, no more. It was taken over completely by the armies. You used to say, look at that snot his nose, Lance Corporal, you know, things like that, telling you what to do. Fellas possibly never had a work in their life, just join the army, you know, or come out to jail, join the army, telling you what to do. We all took offence at it. Civilians, you know, do this and do that. And as I told you before, if the thing moved, you had to salute it, and if it didn't, you had to paint it. That was discipline.
Did you have, or any of your friends have any problems with the discipline, in the sense that...
No. We didn't refuse. Automatically you did it, and that was it. You came to accept it in the end. And of course it was a good thing to have, when you think about it. Because, I mean, if you went into battle without any discipline, well, you just have no battle. You know, you disobeyed orders without question. You didn't have time to think. As I said before, if you did think, you wouldn't do it. I mean, nobody's going to charge a machine gun if the lead eyes are going to get shot. But this common sense, isn't it? But we didn't question it. Just go forward, and you went forward.
So there came a time when you accepted the discipline, but in the beginning it must have been pretty...
It was rough. As I say, all you seemed to do all day was salute. Salute this and salute that, or guard this or guard that. You know, it seemed to have no purpose. I mean, I was in England, several months. Now, you only fired the rifle once, and that was down at Whitburn. And we got sick with that because we had to stand outside the cougars waiting for boiling water to pour down the barrel, you know. And that sickened us after the whole day down there. Well, that's the only time I fired my rifle.
Why did they pour boiling water down your barrel?
Just to clean it.
It was still in its oil.
Oh, yes, but that was their principle, is clean it out. Whether it was under sickness or not, I don't know, but it had that effect. Yeah, I mean, you did have a pull through, you know, 4x2, with oil, as you say, but nowhere to have the water poured down the barrel to clean it. So,
your initial training, what form did that take?
Marching, drill, arms drill, you know, slow arms, shoulder arms, quick march, slow march, till you were actually sick. That's all.
And did you do route marches?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. 25 miles, thing like that. Oh, yes.
And what were you carrying with you on the 25 miles?
Your full pack. You have a second in your back, your small pack, and your water bottle, you know, your gas mask and nothing, and your tin hat. No, you didn't wear your tin hat, you just carried it over the back. It all depended on the felt.
What pace did you do your...
Well, we're the fastest in the British Army, but I think we're worth about 160, shall we say. It's a fast march.
And you did your 20 whatever it was miles.
Oh yes, the same speed. Oh yes, all the time.
And that was the same as the drill speed on the playground.
Yes, I think the church played was faster. I might be wrong about the 160. It might be being 140, but you know it was pretty fast, faster than anybody else.
What kind of PE did you get then to keep you fit? To get you fit.
Well, it wasn't strenuous, just the arms above your head, bend down, arms to the side, things like that, you know. You did that on the morning, of course.
That was every morning?
Oh, yes. At least we did. Then about 7:30, for about half an hour.
What time was Ravalli?
Oh, I couldn't say, about 7, I think.
And did you have to do your these exercises before breakfast?
Oh, yes. But don't ask me what I had for breakfast, I couldn't tell you.
What about the accommodation? Where are we sleeping?
On the floor, with the palliass and the three blankets. No pillar. Use your boot or your tin hat or your haversack. Never any pillars. At least we didn't. And in the end, we just ended up on the floor with no palliass at all when we started to move about, you know. But you got used to it. It's some kind of nice sleep once you got used to it, you know. Must have had a lot of fat on those sides.
The weapon you had was the 303 rifle?
Yes, the old Lee Enfield, 303. I had the same rifle all throughout the war, and the only difference was they put a smaller bayonet on in the desert. And I used to say, well, look at that, we're getting closer to the Germans every time. The bigger one was far better. You know, you could do more with it. Open tins of this and tins of that. But the smaller one, to me, was just useless, a little spike. I don't know why they changed it.
Did you have any training in other weapons in these early days?
Oh, we tried them all. I mean, the plane gun and the mortar. We'd all had a go at them all, you know. But the main ones we were concerned with was the 2-inch mortar, the plane gun, the Tommy gun later, because you only want possession, you know, on your rifle. I mean, the plane gun, you had to strip it down, put it together, blindfold it otherwise, till you got perfect with it, you know. And that was our main weapon on the carriers, the plane gun.
Did you do any manoeuvres in your early days?
Oh, yes, but we didn't know what it was all for.
What form did they take?
Well, I say we didn't know what it was for. You just set out. You got no plan. Well, I mean, we went to Exmoor in the snow. And we stopped out overnight. And I covered my blanket up to keep warm. And next morning, when I started the engine, lads got the shock of the lash because they didn't know I was there. And the fog dropped down. And we had to go make our way back. And I met this lieutenant and about 7 men walking, and he thumbed us down. He says, give us this, will you? He said, I don't know where I am. He was lost. And of course, I had no instruments, but being in the carrier, I didn't care which way I went because I knew I had the transport, you know. And you know, I found out after the war, he put me in for the medal for that. I didn't get it, like.
So, how many weeks or what period of time was the basic training?
Fortnight.
And then what did you do after that?
Well, you just, more like guard duties. You know, guard this, guard that.
Was this still at the castle?
Oh no, we were only there about a week or so. We were around that area, went from the castle to Willington, to Dunsworth, from Dunsworth to Meadowfield, where we learned to carry, and just around that area. Then we went down to Hartlepool, what you call a holding battalion, a distribution battalion in other words. And from there I went down to Rudgley, where I joined the 9th DLI, got my army number 445-7410. It's got my militia number then, you see. And a lot of, was it Kingsthorpe Shire Infantry joined at the same time to make the 9th DLI up to Stent, which had just come back from Dunkirk.
How did you come to be selected for carriers?
I have no idea, to be honest. I think it's just one of those things. I mean, for instance, at the holding battalion, I was a chef's assistant, And I called out one morning in Fleelands, and I was at the back. And they tossed stakes out. Here, you have that. You have that. I didn't get one, mate, but that's the way they worked. Send it down to the ninth as a corporal, or the lands corporal. But as I was at the back. So possibly that's why I was picked for the carriers. I don't know. Of course, then again, they knew I was a driver. That might have had something to do with it, you know.
So when did you first meet the carrier?
At Meadowfield. That's the thing. It was an old Lloyd Garner effort with a little tiller bar. He's going down the block. And Tate Town, of course. And that's where I first was introduced to it.
You said Lloyd Garner.
Lloyd Garner, that's the make of it.
I see, yes.
I don't know what mark it was, but it was a very old-fashioned thing. But that's the same principle, you know, tiller bar. Lock each track, each turn of the tiller bar. Of course, the modern ones had their steering wheel. That was the only difference.
And you were just driving round in this?
Round and round, just learned the gears and how to start it and stop it, you know, and up banks and down banks and what gradient you could cover, how deep the water was you could cover, things like that, you know.
What kind of performance did they have?
Oh, quite good. I mean, I've had 45 out of mine, out of the Ben carrier. And supposed to climb one in 2.5, but whether or not, I don't know. If I tested one inside this. I must have been crackers. I've gone along the top of a mountain. I took a straight down. And when I got to the other side, all the lads jumped out. I was almost perpendicular. I'd go up 2 foot, drop one. 2 foot and drop one. And when I got to the top, the thing started to fall down. I just gave this turn, but not quick enough. I actually went over the other side, on the side. And I looked down, I had about 200 foot drop. And I was balanced, you know. If I move forward, I dropped. If I move back, I dropped. So I says, right, man, I was only about 20. I put my left lock on, I put my foot down, I turned it down, I was actually over the edge, and I come back. Didn't do it again, but I thought it could climb.
Can you describe the instrumentation and the various things that enable you to drive and to manoeuvre a carrier?
Well, the Ben carrier, it's just a four-speed gearbox, 1, 2, 3, 4, and reverse. It has a steering wheel. And when you turn the steering wheel to your left, you operate a lever which locks your left track and skids, in other words. And the right one turns you down, so you turn the left. And of course, it's the same the other way. The right wheel turns to the right. And of course, if you want to climb, of course, you're always in the lowest gear, number one. That's, in other words, the same as a car.
And your feet gears, what's the
Well, the clutch, pedal and brake.
Nothing more than that?
Oh, no, nothing more, no. As I say, the steering wheel did all the work. Not like a tank had the tiller bar. You know, but you still had the clutch and the brake and the axle area.
What thickness of armour did a Brendan carrier have?
Well, it's supposed to be bulletproof. It was roughly, from what I remember, just over a quarter of an inch thick, the front and the sides. But the bottom wasn't very thick, you know. But it was bulletproof only. And of course, there's no top on it. It's dangerous if you're in a low country. And then they're looking down on top of you, you know.
And what about crew?
Four. Three altogether. The driver, the commander, and the Ben gunner. That was the crew. And there was three carriers in each section, and there was four sections. And the funny thing what always puzzled me was, in the if you were in artillery and you had four sections, each with a full sergeant, you were classed as a battery sergeant major. But the Ben carriers and the anti-tank and mortars were something new. We all had four sections with a full sergeant, but they called me a platoon sergeant, not sergeant major. Yet I had the same responsibility. I could never understand why.
In your training with the Brendan carriers, mm-hmm. other than learning to drive it, once you'd gone beyond that, what form did your training take then?
Well, it depends actually what you were doing. If you went on and was scheme, you just did as you were told. I mean, they might say, you just take a position here. You always took your Brendan gun off, and the carriers were hidden behind you. Just to support any infantry, you know, at the time. That's all they were for, supporting the roads. They weren't attacking the roads. Well, they were, towards the end of the war, the tanks were using them, because if there's any bazookas in France where the hedges were, you know, they just wouldn't go down the road. And of course you can't bear them. Where with a Ben carrier, you could look over the top and see the Germans. So we went down in front. I mean, crap, we'll call the suicide squad.
You went in ahead of the tanks?
Yes.
In lots of cases
like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
But the idea was that you went to a position and then you got out.
That's it, and left the gun behind. See? But actually, you travelled as a platoon in headquarters companies. And each company had a battalion, one carrier of its own. But if they came up against their machine gun post, they couldn't move. They'd send maybe one or two, even the whole platoon, to go and sort it out, you know. And then you'd leave your gun, take the enemy on, and that was it. Then advance or come back, whichever way, you know, it was favourable.
Was there any other role that the Bren had other than support in that way?
No, not really. It's just a support, as I say, a support and weapon, like the anti-tank and the mortars. Only use when you were called on. You know, you weren't an attacking force. There were, have been, at Gazala Box, for instance, we went out, we'd been there one day, my battalion, my platoon of carriers, one company of infantry, and three tanks, I think it's a quarter squad anyway, we went and attacked a post just outside Tamimi. You know, the funny thing was, we were doing about 4 miles an hour for the infantry. They couldn't be bothered to wait, and they ran in front of us, which made us helpless, we couldn't fire. But we caught the Germans unawares, and the Salen, and we took about 100 prisoners. Remember that? And our first battle. Because coming back, the Germans knew exactly where the outpost was, and let us know that now with the shells, you know. I lost one carrier there, fell into behind us.
So what was your opinion of carriers then as a vehicle
good.
In the war?
Good. They were very good for what they were used for. They were never meant for tanks. As I say, you just had the armour, or you didn't have any guns heavier than the Bren gun, you know, which was only a glorified 303 when all said and done. Only fires fast.
Was it a reliable vehicle?
Oh, yes. Aye. Well, of course, a lot depended on the mechanic. And we're all good mechanics. That was part of my job, to teach them to know a bit about the engine as well as the drive, you know, the maintenance side. Each man could fire a Bren gun. Each man could fire the mortar. So if one was killed, the other one could take his place, which I thought was a good idea. You know, and I've taken many a driving class. In fact, I almost lost my life once through that, because I had a Scot corporal, and he was driving. And I'm going through the minefields. There's a little gap, you know. And at the end, there's a little sharp turn. I said, I do. Go along. He put his foot in that shell instead of the brake. And of course, what's that do of the mines? Now, these mines are on the top, so I don't know whether they were there for putting in or whether they'd just been dug up. But I was horrified to see the mines going underneath. I jammed them there. I said, get out. Dear me, it was scary. Lad alive. He said, what's the matter, Sarge? Put Scotch in it. What's the matter? I said, don't you see where you are?
Was part of your training then to be able to work on the engines of the...
Yes, I don't know whether it was general or not mine, but in my lot we did. In fact, I used to tear the class out and put a matchstick in one of the jets so it would stop, and then they'd have to find the fault. I mean, that's the quickest way to find a fault, if you deliberately put one on, you know. And they got quite good at it. But as the war went on, all had stopped. You just had no time. You were looking just to keep going. As long as you got the pedal to go, that was it. You know, you had no time for driving or classes like that.
Do you recall when you joined the 9th Battalion at Rugeley?
No, not there. I might have it down in the paper there. I couldn't really say now.
How were you received when you first joined them?
You just stand about all day, you got sorted out. You know, you go in this platoon, you go in that platoon, that was it. And you just accepted. I mean, we couldn't understand the King's Thoughts lads, the way they were talking, the lads from Birmingham and Wool, and they couldn't understand us. You know, some of the Georgians say, well, gone warm. No, gone yam. And they say, well, gone warm. You know, kid each other about the language.
Did you take carriers down with you to join?
No, they were there. They were provided for us while we were there, let's put it that way.
You joined the carrier?
Platoon, stayed away. And I stopped there for the rest of the war. Mm-hmm.
Do you recall who your officer was?
That's a funny thing. I've tried for ages to remember that man. All I can remember was he had a walking stick wherever he went. But can I heck think where he went? It's funny, I remember the others, but not this fella. I don't know where I can find out, to be honest, you know. But I suppose it would have been new, he just didn't bother, you know, really. He hadn't time to know people in that such a short time. And when we went to Egypt, well, I don't know whether he came with us or not.
Originally,
Mr. As I say, it wasn't very long, but I couldn't remember all that far back, you know. It's a long time to remember now.
And where did you move to then?
I couldn't really say. I can get you the You know, if you want. You want the paper?
We can get them later.
Fair enough. Because I wouldn't know. We went with that many places, you know, Littlehampton, Tiverton, near Exeter, and places like that.
What were you doing down in Devon?
Just the same guards. Getting off of the LDV, the local defence volunteers, on top of the hills, and things like that.
And what accommodation do you have down there?
Mostly barns, or tents, bell tents. 32 to a tent. Not exactly the best of accommodation. But still, as I say, you got used to these things. And the weather wasn't too bad, you know. It was mostly guard duties, and things like that.
I was the carrier platoon with the main battalion?
Oh, yes. I was stowed together. Oh, yes. 12 carriers.
How did the people receive you in Devon and Dorset?
Well, the same as canny people, than what we saw of them. As I say, we only saw them maybe once a week. They used to come to the battalion concert I was telling about, and they used to enjoy themselves. I used to do a few songs, you know. I suppose the war being on, they'd entertain anybody, you know. You understand?
So the battalion had a concert regularly?
Oh, not regularly. Just every Thursday, a few lads would get up and give a turn, you know, just to leave the boredom, as it were.
And where was this held?
A place called Morecambe Lake, in the church hall. It's just outside Lyme Regis.
Did you have any experience of air raids at all?
No. We saw them going up to London, maybe 300 or 400 in a pack. But never bothered us.
Not any invasion scares?
No. Not that I remember, anyway. All we did just carry on the same guard duty, you know, at night. That was all.
And the food, was it good?
It was army food. Most potato, you know, mash, stuff like that. I wouldn't say it was the best, but, I mean, it wasn't bad, really, you know. We got by on it, anyway. Of course, you could buy stuff yourself in MDS, you know.
Do you remember what state the battalion was in? Because it had just come back from France.
Well, honestly, no, because there wasn't that many of them. You know, a few NCOs, but like everything else at Mercy McClure, they were almost right down there. And when we got the next lot, we just more or less mucked in, you know, as though nothing had happened. They had come from somewhere, and they just joined in, that was it. They still had their own mates.
Do you recall any of the NCOs that were in charge of you at this time?
Well, a fellow called Jobson, I think it was Gated on Newcastle, a fellow called Gallen, but I don't remember the others. I love from that lad, Jobson, but he's a good lad at heart. You know, they love Diamond, but a good lad.
Did you feel that you were treated well in the battalion?
Well, it's not a question of whether you treat well. You just obey what they tell you to do. You have no thoughts as regards that, you know. Nothing private, no private thoughts. You know, just accepted the conditions you were living under as part of the war.
What are your recollections about officers?
Let's say they were officers. They expected to be saluted, and that was it. I remember once in Sicily, by a jeep coming towards us. A driver and an officer. So I looked in the window, you see, and this jeep pulled up. He said, "Why didn't you salute me?" I said, "I'm sorry, sir. I looked at the driver. I didn't look at the driver." I said, you know, he was driving and the driver was in his place. I just thought, well, he'd been through a battle and he wanted saluting. That was the discipline, you know. You look, he didn't get shot.
Was there a respect for the officers?
Oh, yes. Well, as I say, you just accepted them. They had a job to do, you had a job to do, and they were your leaders, you followed them. You were so used to taking orders, you just accepted things. You didn't question them, but you'd done it. Not like today. I suppose I'm asking today, what's that for?
About what time did you leave for the Middle East, Mr.
Well, about May 1941, we sailed from Garrick in Scotland on board the Oduna, which was badly overcrowded. We had no mishaps, except that another boat in the Conway banged into us during the night, and I woke up and found the mess deck flooded. But other than that, we went and stayed at Durban for one night. Then we went to Cyprus. at a place called Kano, Lakatamia.
What was it like in Cyprus?
Hot. That's all I can say about it. It's hot. Just another place.
What were you doing?
Just patrols, things like that. You know, exercises, arms drills, saluting, nothing special. And we're just near Nicosia, that was the capital. And from there I went to Jaffa, and then to Iraq.
What do you recall of the journey to Iraq?
No, Iraq was something terrible, because when we got to Palestine, we formed a convoy. But the vehicles were civilian, food trucks, to see the tracks of the carriers. One carrier on one truck. And the asked for volunteers for Don R's. Well, I wanted to drive the bike, I went with them. Now, we set off champion, but when we got to the desert, the Arab just shot out all directions. They knew that place like the palm of the hand. So we were travelling along maybe 40, 50 miles an hour on soft sand, then hit softer sand and you were off, or locks or things like that. At 3:30 in the afternoon, we'd stop in the middle of nowhere, get the band and bugles out to mount a battalion guard. You'd have to polish your brasses and scrub your equipment. And that sickened everybody. I mean, there's no point in it. We're covered from head to foot in sand, you know, after all that distance. And, of course, when we went to a place called Mosul outside Baghdad, it was so cold, one of the lads died during the night.